This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Afternoons on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer. I'm Poonam Verma. On the show today, we're coming to you live from Inner Fight Gym at Studio City with House and House. And we're checking the local community here, what it's like to live and work in the neighbourhood. And we're going to be talking to Studio One Hotel Marketing Manager Michelle. Also sales consultant from House & House, Ibrahim. Simon Baker, the co-founder of House & House, is talking about the advantages and the pitfalls of buying off-plan. And a manager of the local nursery around Studio City and the Arabian Ranch is going to be finding out what it's like if you want to move here with your kids. And it's Monday, so we have our legal hour. And today we have lawyer Andrew Lyons talking about real estate.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With House and House, 10 years of unlocking opportunities in Dubai real estate.
It's Poonam Verma today coming to you from Inner Fight at Studio City. And we're here to find out more about this area, what it's like to live and work here. And one man in the know is Ibrahim Abdul Karim. He's a sales consultant from House and House. How are you doing, Ibrahim?
Hey, I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
I love the fact you're so professional. You're filming us right now.
Yes. We're all trying to get into that now.
We are indeed. Yeah. Now, tell me a little bit about your background, because I like to call myself a journalist. Others call me a stalker. You've been here about a year, right?
Yeah, I just passed my official 12 months here in Dubai.
And were you in real estate before, because you came from Toronto?
So from Montreal.
Montreal. I knew it was Canada. I just don't know which one.
Yeah, we're on the eastern part, the French part of Canada.
Oh, you speak French too then. Yes.
Yeah, correct. So my experience comes from automotive. So I did a period of 6 years working for Infiniti, which is the car brand, up in Eastern Canada.
Okay. And did you think there was not enough money in there, so you'd go to real estate?
So obviously real estate is a different sort of environment, but it's not necessarily just towards the money. I am from a Middle Eastern background. So wanting to come here just brings me a bit closer to some family members, as well as the taxes, if we're going to talk a bit about the financial aspect of it. So taxes in Canada can range anywhere up to 52%.
I know. I didn't know this. I thought England was bad, but Canada's like even worse, I think. So why real estate when you came here? Was it something you were interested in?
To be very honest, in my last year of staying in Canada, I was looking into getting into real estate in Canada as well. But then bank interest rates started to skyrocket. And for us, it was just a bit of an eye-opener, because considering the fact of the changing markets over there in Canada, I've previously visited Dubai in 2012. And ever since then, I think a lot of people have had the same situation that I have if they came to come here for vacation.
Yeah.
It's just captivating. And ever since then, I've been like interested to try and like relocate to come here, but I don't feel I was ready around like 12 years ago.
So, you know, if you look at the TV shows and Instagram, everything looks so glossy and luxurious when it comes to real estate these days, right? I grew up in a real estate company, but it wasn't glossy where I came from in Birmingham, I have to say. Is it as easy as it looks if you want to get into it?
I would really say that it depends on the type of person that you are. I think the most important part of real estate is patience and making sure that you're persevering and just doing the same thing over and over again, because eventually you will reap the benefits of what you put in. It's a very, very competitive environment, very different from what I'm used to in automotive, which is also considered a very competitive environment. But the competitiveness here is that everyone from all around the world is trying to make it. And the top of all the ranks are here competing to get the same route.
So let's talk facts. Let's say if there's a young person listening going, I'd love to get into real estate. Do you ultimately make money from a commission? Is there an actual salary?
No. So it's commission based only. However, choosing the right company is the best thing that you can do throughout your entire career. Being with House & House, not just because I'm working with House & House, but I've seen people from other companies that have pivoted towards House & House. The training that they give you, even before you come here to Dubai, they really prepare you mentally and they let you know financially what to expect before coming over to here. It's a big change. Like people have, like myself, we had a career that was set out and prepared and I left it all to come over here. But having that person on your side explaining to you what to expect step by step, maybe a period of 4 to 6 months before you feel like you're set up, is an important thing to keep in mind if you're coming over to Dubai.
And I've spoken to a lot of real estate companies internationally, and they do say it is a 24/7 job.
100%.
you have to be on your toes, because if you don't answer the phone, another sales consultant will.
100%. You can sometimes get inquiries from clients at 11 p.m. The latest one I got was 2 a.m. on a Saturday. I was still up. So for me, if I'm up and the clients inquire, then if I want to answer them, then obviously I'll get the upper hand. So being available 24/7 is part of the job. And then sometimes, occasionally, you know, you're free with your family. It just takes lifting up your phone. So why would you not text your client if you're texting your friend?
Okay. What makes you trustworthy? How do you know which sales consultant to go with?
Oof, obviously, the brand is the first thing. But a lot of people here, they get lots of calls from lots of agents.
Yeah.
So even the clients themselves have built sort of an understanding of the first phrases coming out of an agent's mouth, if they kind of feel. It does happen when I first started, you know, you would get a call from a client and you would try to answer them to the best of your ability, and they would understand that, they would feel like the honesty that you're trying to portray.
Yeah.
And a lot of feedback I would get is like, you know what, usually I hang up the phone when I'm talking to an agent because it's all just jibber jabber. But in your case, I really felt like, you know what, I think he has something to say. And so clients have built sort of an understanding of what it's like to deal with a trustworthy company, obviously,
yeah,
and someone who's trying to be as honest as possible when dealing with their most expensive asset.
So we're here at Studio City. Let's talk about this area. Now, you've only been here a year. I've been here 17 years. There was nothing here 17 years ago, honestly. I haven't been here for many years, so I don't even know what's happening. Tell me about the area when it comes to living here, working here, the nearby amenities, even things like clinics and schools.
So regarding this area, obviously, it's still an upcoming area. There's lots of room for developments, and lots of main developers have also invested and have been invested in this area for a really long time. We are part of the greater Dubailand area,
yes,
which stretches out on a very, you know,
yeah,
big plot.
And yeah, when I came, that was just on a map.
There you go. So I believe we're in the northwestern side of the Dubailand area, and we swam across different communities that probably most of the people have heard of, like Damak Hills 1, Tilal Al-Gaf, and my area of expertise, which is Mudan. So, yeah, regarding the schools, we've got around 8 different schools.
Really?
Yeah, and we've got around over 10 plus nurseries within the community. Every single community has their own clinics. Hospitals aren't directly available within this area.
I love that they have their own clinic, because
yeah,
not every neighborhood has that.
Well, more and more, I believe most developers are understanding that, like, customer service
yeah
is what you need to do right now to
yeah
be independent and to be unique from other developers. And we're seeing that heavily invested, as well as the leadership of the country and having this metro station that will be passing by 2030, if I'm not mistaken. And one of the stops, the closest one, will be in Damak Hills 1.
Okay.
So having that accessibility. And even before that example, Dubai Properties is the developer that has built Mudan. They've already had like 2-3 bus stations that will take you directly to Mall of Emirates, which is 17 kilometers away
yeah
from Mudan. It's basically like a 20-minute drive if there's no traffic. And the best part, obviously, is having multiple access points. So we've got Al Qudra on one side, and we've got Hessa on the other side. We've also got Emirates Roads that stretches all the way to Jebel Ali Zone. So there's lots of ways to bypass any sort of traffic, and the accessibility is fantastic.
Well, they're building new roads soon as well for the around Hesse Street to avoid all the traffic, so that should help as well.
There's always constant development. This is something that I can definitely compare being here in Dubai or coming back to Montreal. Montreal is a very old city, and we've had lots of infrastructure that's been there for a really long time, and it's much more difficult to basically develop those areas and to really like allow it to be more user-friendly for people who are currently staying.
So are you seeing more and more self-sufficient communities being built, like you said, because, you know, people like to stay within the community where there's a mall down the street, there's restaurants, there's a clinic. Because when I came, I live in the Greens, and they do have that, and it's building more and more.
Of course.
But do you feel like these are getting more popular now?
Especially post-COVID, we've had something similar due to COVID. A lot of people are kind of remote working from home, or we would say like on a hybrid basis. So when I'm dealing with clients and I ask them, like example, we would have all of the Mudan properties have a maid's room, but a lot of them have changed them into study rooms, for example. So they want to have that sort of flexibility to work from home. So yeah, having the communities and they're fully served by their own mini, let's say, ecosystems is definitely a benefit, especially the parks and the way that everything is being laid out nowadays.
I agree.
Yeah.
So Ibram, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I wish you a very good year ahead. You've only been here a year, and I hope you sell loads of properties and make loads of commission.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With House & House, 10 years of unlocking opportunities in Dubai real estate.
So I'm now with the big boss, one of the co-founders of House & House, Simon Baker. Now, according to my research, Simon, and you know I like to research, I read that you like to provide pragmatic advice to clients rather than just pushing them towards whatever is hot right now on the property market. Does that make you a nice real estate agent?
Gosh, that's no pressure.
Or is that a lie?
Thank you for having us. No, it's no lie at all, really. I mean, obviously, we've been here. I've been doing property here, as you mentioned earlier, since 2005, so a long time. We've got a lot of long-standing clients who I'd like to see as friends as much as customers, who we've looked after for a huge amount of time. We manage their properties, whether it's for rental, for long or short-term rentals. So it's people that we really value that hopefully help provide House & House with the reputation that it's got and that hopefully continues to deserve in the future.
Now, one thing that's growing a lot since I've been here, you head up the off-plan division at House & House. Now, can we talk about some of the, first of all, the benefits? We're going to talk about something you have, the pitfalls you need to look out for too, but the benefits of buying off-plan.
Sure. Okay. So obviously, to property, technology's changed and property's changed a lot. Advances in materials and, has moved on so much in the last 20 years. So of course, the new properties coming to market, they aren't always better, but in a lot of cases, they're probably built better and they've got better finishes, a bit more in the 21st century, if you like. So people aren't just buying with this speculation for, is how much is it going to appreciate in the future? They're buying for something that's going to hopefully be a very modern new home come completion, brand new, which is obviously very nice as well.
So let's talk about the potential, though, for price appreciation when you talk about off-plan. Because I'm assuming, when you're buying off-plan, is it buying off-plan where the development is going to take place, or it's just land, or where are we in the process?
Okay, so usually when you're buying off-plan, you're buying from, one of the big developers, and it could well be before literally a spade's been put in the ground. So it could be very, very early. And of course, you need to look. It's not always going to be necessarily cheaper. It might be that the fact that you're going to be buying a better property on its completion in 3 years' time. So it's not just about price. Obviously, price appreciation is one big thing, and we need to compare what the current value is of a similar property to the price that you're paying off plan. And it's not always cheaper, so you've got to be careful that you're not buying something that's maybe the same price.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say I'm buying a property off plan today, and they'll say it's going to complete in 2 years. And in 2 years, prices have gone up, developments have changed, meaning what they thought the budget was, they need to pay more. Does that mean it's going to cost me more?
No, of course, if you've bought the unit off plan, you've bought it at a certain
price.
The price has gone up in value, if the market's appreciated, you've made that profit in your pocket, which is fantastic.
Okay.
All I was trying to say is that some developments, they're not all created equal, and there are times we have to advise customers and say, look, that project isn't necessarily better value buying off plan than ready. For some people, it may be, and this sounds a bit strange coming from someone who loves off plan, but it may be a better opportunity for someone to buy a unit that's ready, for example, depending on your financial situation.
Yeah.
If you were going to take a mortgage of, let's say, 80%, I'd probably advise you to first go and buy somewhere that's somewhere built and ready, and which goes a bit against the off-plan investment side of things.
What are some of the main concerns or questions you should ask any developer, the top three maybe, before buying off-plan, which can cause a pitfall in the long run if they don't?
Okay, so I think the main thing, of course, is anyone would ask, is to make sure that the property is going to get built, isn't it? So you're buying off plan, you're buying a piece of paper, hopefully the developer's already bought the land. The main thing to make sure is that the developer has got a very, very strong track record. The big government developers that have been here for 20 plus years, I'd put someone like Emaar at the very top of that list. So of course you're paying a premium, but you're getting peace of mind. You know that project, that property is going to be built. It's going to be built to a good standard. It's going to be part of a very nice community. So I think those are all very, very important.
Any little knowledge on when it comes to buying off-plan little locations or neighbourhoods that you think are good to look at and do some research on right now?
I mean, certainly these master communities, if you look at supply in the last, in say 2023, we did a good off-plan market report that's on our website.
Yeah.
People were shocked by the numbers. There were 87% apartments sold last year. Yeah. This is off-plan numbers. There were 11% townhouses, and there was only 1.4% independent villas.
Interesting.
Which is interesting, right? And I think people in our team were shocked. They couldn't believe how low the number of independent villas were. Of course, you have to be in a position to afford that segment of the market. But if you are, I think then that's something very, very strong to look at.
I think there's a lot more choice as well. There's different varieties now to pick from, and the neighbourhoods are extending and growing. So I don't know, but the people are as well. So what can you
do? Yeah, so the population's growing. There's huge demand, obviously, especially from families. So this is where it's shifting. In the last few years, last 10 or 15 years, maybe it was more investors coming, more speculators coming to the market. Now we see people move from Europe, people moving all over the world who need a house to live in. They've got two or three children that need to go to school somewhere. Yeah. So they're looking at those communities, which is why you've seen huge appreciation in places like Arabian Ranches that we're obviously all partial to. A lot of these established villa communities have done very, very well.
Amazing. Simon Baker, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm obsessed by real estate, so it's been really good to speak to you. And I'll talk more about real estate after the break.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. So it's Poonam Verma today till 5 p.m. filling in for Helen for a few days. Studio City with House and House, and at the moment I am at Inner Fight Studios, and the man behind it is Marcus Smith, and he's looking very chilled out for a man who's into high performance endurance and working people to the bone.
You've got to relax.
You're very relaxed.
You've got to relax.
So I know you have an interesting story. Yeah, I can tell by your face, like, you've been through stuff. I can just tell.
Don't look that bad, do I?
So let's have a coffee. We're in the cafe. Let's have a chat. Tell me a little bit about yourself, because I want to know why you're pushing yourself to the limits of human endurance, because you've done some crazy stuff. Let's start from the beginning.
Bit of perspective, isn't it?
Put your feet up, everybody. Here we go.
Put your feet up. I guess it's my thoughts and sort of take on life is that, obviously, you get one shot and let's see what we can do. And people express themselves in various different ways. The House and House guys express themselves through delivering amazing homes to people. They do it incredibly well. I've chosen a different path. I'm trying to explore the limits of the human body and mind and the limits of human endurance. And I do that through various tests. And yeah, it's a lot of fun as well.
But you've always been into sports, right? From age.
Yeah.
Who encouraged you into that? Was it something that you were just passionate about?
100% my family. We moved to Dubai in 1983.
Oh wow, you're a local.
Sort of. And mum and dad were involved in sport, and specifically running and endurance sports, and dad played rugby from the start. So that's where I think you're a lot a product of your environment. And I grew up and that's all I knew.
What was the environment like back then when it came to keeping fit and sports and that, if you grew up?
It was amazing because you just open your back door and you can run through the desert for as long as you want and you didn't have to plan anything. And
But when it came to were there gyms around a lot when you were growing up? Or
there was a few gyms all attached to hotels, but we had a rugby club and I was at Des and we had a sports field, and you probably know, kicking a football against the brick wall for 5 hours was great entertainment.
When I was in England, do you remember when you used to stand on the opposite side of the curbs and you'd throw the ball? Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Let's go and find some curbs. Come on, let's go and do that.
Exactly.
Get the basic stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
That's probably showing my age, but that's what life was like, and that's what sport was here, and it was all through school. And I guess I wasn't super academic, or I just liked disruption in classes, so I didn't really learn much, and I played a lot of sport, and I enjoy it. It's fun.
So tell us about Inner Fight here at Studio City. Like, how long has it been around, and why did you decide to open something like this?
We established the brand in 2008. We moved here into all of our residents in 2020 during the pandemic. We'd been in a few locations before, and actually I used to work for Adidas for a long time, and then I worked for Nike, and I walked in one day and I realized that wasn't what I wanted to do. I realized that I got a lot more satisfaction and a lot more drive and a lot more excitement out of helping people live healthy lives, because healthy lives were happy lives. And I just chucked in the corporate world and I started the business, and it was really a passion project, to be honest, and it's grown. And yeah, some days I walk in here and I'm like, wow, this is cool. Like, we're seeing a lot of people do great things, and the energy and the smiles is insane.
Now, being the greedy person I am, I parked outside Inner Fight, and the first thing you did is, where's the cafe? We didn't even go into the gym to actually take a look around, which is really bad on our part. Tell me what is different about this gym, what I'll find there. And when it comes to training, is it something where, I mean, you're so into endurance, we're going to talk about some of the things you've done. Like, if I went there, would you literally make me run 20 miles?
No, not at
first
all.
First time round.
I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions about fitness and about, I guess you could say, our brand of fitness. We teach functional strength and conditioning. We want people to move well, safely. And I always say to people whenever they come in, there's only two things I really care about. One is that you're safe, and two, that you're having fun. If we do that, we can participate in sport ongoing. Mm. The main reason why people stop sport is through an injury, lack of safety, and then not enjoying it, lack of fun.
So let's talk about an injury. Because, yes, that's where the story is going. See how I linked into that?
Totally.
We need the violin now, because this is serious. Tell me about your story. Come on, I'm serious. This is a big thing.
Long story short, in 2018, I was riding my bike, and I got hit by a truck, hit a brick wall, and then hit the floor. Punctured my lung, broke 7 ribs, and broke my shoulder, and ended up in intensive care.
Okay, tell me about the recovery of that. Like, how long? You're laughing and you're smiling. That's a near-life death experience.
It is, absolutely. And that's what's so beautiful. On the 9th of February 2018, I post on my Instagram, everything happens for a reason. And on the 10th, I had my crash. Now, you can read into it however you want, but these things happen in life. And it's how you, it's maybe cliched and cheesy, but it's how you get up from it and how you keep going. And it wasn't easy the whole way. You're laid in intensive care. I can't move. I don't know if I'm going to live or die. I'm fully conscious. And like, there's all these noises going on. It's very, very challenging. But I had a moment in there, helped by my wife. And I just looked down at my body that was pretty broken. And I said, you know, what can I do now just to be a little bit better and just to feel a little bit better? And at that moment, it was just like literally moving my left hand that I hadn't moved for since the crash. So I'm incredibly grateful for what happened. There's a whole long story to it, obviously, but it happened and I can't change it. But what I can do is I can decide how I want to carry it forward. And it's quite funny because in the sort of short term after the crash, everyone's like, oh, has it changed you much? And you're like, no. And now 6 years on, like, yeah, it's completely changed me.
I mean, with those injuries as well, how is your body now? Are you okay? Is everything?
Yeah, I'm fantastic, really, because I saw it almost as a project. I had to rebuild my body from scratch. And that excited me because I'm uber curious about how the human body works and more so about how the mind works. And I had this purpose to build my body back. And when you have a purpose, you have a drive. And when you have drive, you can go mm. through brick walls, you know?
And you know, the name fits perfectly with you, Inner Fight. I saw that and I said, there is a story behind this name in itself. It's a great name though, because it is an inner fight to get up every day positive and move. Because life is going to hit you up and down all the time, isn't it?
It is, and it does. And, you know, Dubai is very fast-paced, loads of opportunity, but loads of challenges as well. It's a great place to live, as I said. I've called it home for over 40 years. But it's not, life's not linear, and you have to take the good and the bad. And it's no different from wherever you are in the world. So mental resilience and understanding really what drives you, what your purpose is the key. And that's one of my biggest sort of desires for my clients, is that they wake up every day with a desire to live and super excited.
Okay. Now, I've done a lot of extreme sports and crazy stuff on live on TV. I nearly died a few times, but I survived, had a few injuries, not like yours though. Now tell us what you've done. And have you done this before the injuries or after? I'm just trying to figure this out.
I don't like to talk about it. No.
Okay, I'll tell everybody about it. He completed 30 marathons in 30 days. Why?
Honestly, it was a result of my crash.
Are you serious? You did it after?
Yeah,
That's amazing.
My crash was in February of 2018, and I ran my marathons as part of Dubai Fitness Challenge in October to November 2018. And when I was training to try and set a world record in ultra cycling, and I had this moment when I was in the hospital, I was like, I can't ride my bike anymore. What can I do? One of my first loves is running, and I was like, I can run. And I just put it all together, called the guys at Dubai Tourism, told them that it was a great idea. They told me that they couldn't figure it out, and then we figured it out. And yeah, it was amazing. We finished in like 15 different schools. It was beautiful.
Did you have that feeling that, you know, I saw my life flash before me and I just want to do as much as I can, or see how far I can go mentally and physically? What was it?
Yes. I had a really interesting moment on the side of the road when I had my crash, and it was almost like an out of body experience.
Oh yeah.
And
I can imagine.
Yeah. And I was like, what is life?
Yeah. I question that all the time.
Exactly. And, you know, so when I have a thought now, I go a lot on my gut feelings. And when I have a thought now, it's just, I just go for it. I don't think too much. It's like, and I'm not reckless. And, you know, I don't want to put my family through what they went through when I had my crash, because I think that was a bit rough. So I try not to be, I guess, selfish. But yeah, it creates, and the longer it goes on, as I said earlier, it's 6 years now, the longer it goes on, the more you just take from that experience. And yeah, life's very short to be not doing cool things and to be stressed out and, you know, to be shouting at someone because your coffee took 7 minutes and, you know, should have taken four and all of this stuff. So don't get me wrong, I get fired up sometimes, but I think we just need to maybe relax a little bit.
I think the universe gave you a sign to say, listen, calm down. And you're spreading that message with motivational talks. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's amazing. I used to do motivational speaking before, and since my crash, you know, people, I guess when you have something a little bit more, I don't know, like jaw-dropping, I guess people would say, they want to hear about it. And it's great to be able to go to an audience and share a story that I just know if they just take a little bit of what I say, their life will be a little bit better. And that's all I really care about. Yeah. I just want to, you know, I just want someone, it might sound a bit cheesy or cliched, but we're going to have a conversation today, or we've had a conversation today. If both of us can leave and just be like a little bit better and a little bit happier, then I think as humans, we've served each other. And that's all I do with my motivational talks. I'll go into companies, have a chat, show them some stories of some broken ribs and, you know, and what I learned, and we crack on.
I like spare ribs with barbecue sauce. Thank you very much. All right, Marcus Smith, it's been a pleasure. You can find him at Inner Fight Studios and online. Where can they find you?
Yeah, innerfight.com or my Instagram, MJD_Smith. We love to chat.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So Studio City is up and coming since I've been here for the past few years. And a few years ago in 2019, a hotel opened called Studio One Hotel. Now, I've seen some pictures. Very quirky, very funky, very boutique looking. And I think it's just nearby where we are right now. Michelle Pronell is head of marketing and communications at the hotel. And she joins me now. How are you?
I'm very, very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on today. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, you've got a nice radio voice. She might take our job. I like it. It's very soothing. So you're going to be celebrating your fifth birthday at the hotel. What are the birthday plans? And are we invited?
Oh, absolutely. Everyone invited. In fact, the whole community is invited, and we're insisting that they are there. It's the 3rd, 4th and 5th of May, and it's a community focused event, so we will be inviting everyone from the neighbourhood as well as the extending neighbourhood as well. We'll be inviting local schools, so local children, to do performances on the Friday. We'll be having live music on the Saturday, and then we'll be doing very fun community focused events on the Sunday. We actually have a pair of teenage chefs who are coming in on the Sunday to challenge all the chefs in Studio One to various different food making.
They're not going to be cooking like cornflakes or cheese on toast.
No. These are pasta experts.
What?
So
these little Gen Zs and millennials are taking over the world.
It's set to be a very, very good event. I'm very excited.
So tell us what we can find in the hotel, because there's so much going on. I'm reading the information and some of the stuff you have, I'm like, you have a private cinema?
We do indeed. 25-seater private cinema. We can fit 30 in there with some well-positioned beanbags. But yes, 25 seats, big comfy seats as well, full Dolby surround sound. It's a stunning.
So can you rent this studio?
You can indeed. Yes, you can come in, use it anytime. We have birthday parties there. You can come and do karaoke parties, private movie screenings. We have adult evenings as well, where the ladies can come on their ladies' nights, enjoy all the classic movies. It really is a very, very unique space. And, you know, it's something that we're really, really proud of. We actually pair up with some really interesting community projects like Team Angel Wolf, for example, and we actually give them the whole cinema, the pizza and the popcorn for free as part of our community outreach project as well. So not only do we obviously utilise it for the community, for families, but we do give back to the community as well.
Now, I'm going to go through a list of some of the programmes that you do, but before I do, what else will we find in the hotel when it comes to amenities or restaurants? What can people do there?
Six 6 restaurants altogether, which is an incredible amount of dining opportunities. I'll start at the very bottom,
okay.
which is the best, obviously, is Latte, which is our Italian restaurant,
yeah.
Serving this beautiful, delicious, authentic Italian food created by a chef who has come from Saudi. Then we have El Chapo's Tacos, which is your Mexican fiesta. We've got Mr. Miyagi's, which is Asian food.
And wax very on,
street,
wax off.
Absolutely, yes. Very street vibe. We have the Main Street Eatery, which everybody, I think, in Dubai knows the Main Street Eatery. We have Rags to Riches.
What is Rags to Riches? Never heard of it.
Rags to Riches, a very new concept, actually, and it's standalone, so it's the only one there. Their food is described as an evolution of taste. It's a very mixture of different cultures all brought together, and the chef there is fantastic as well. Mm. It's got a pool table, very relaxed vibe. They do a quiz night on a Wednesday, which is very good as well. And then, of course, we have the Irish Village.
Ah, you're not a hotel with that.
Can't
Irish,
go anywhere.
The Irish Village is like everywhere all over the world, isn't it? So when it comes to clientele, I'm really interested. What kind of people do you get staying there? Is it business people? Is it families or even people in the community?
So I would say Monday to Friday, like most hotels around the area, very corporate, very business. But then obviously at the weekend, we do get a lot of families, very family-friendly hotel. We do a Wonderland on a Saturday and Sunday, which is very much engaging the families around the area. We have free kids entertainment in there, face painters in the lobby. There's kids activities, so we'll entertain your children. And then you can go and dine, relax and enjoy, and we'll keep the kids happy for a few hours.
So I'm thinking, like, back home, my local hotel would have like membership for the local community and discounts and things like that. Is that what you're trying to create here, so people use the facilities?
I think in order to drive loyalty, it is important to reward people in the local area, and we do give back. So we have a 15% discount for some of the local businesses we partner with, like Boxker, for example, which is a local gym. Anyone who is in the TCOM building, they can avail their discounts at the restaurant, and obviously they get preferential rates as well for the hotel, which can be obviously discussed with the sales team. But in terms of actually the community, we like to reward them with the free kids entertainment, with obviously giving back in terms of Teen Angel Wolf, people like original mixed DJs who are giving back to the community as well. So that's how we drive loyalty, by actually giving them, you know, something of value back as well.
And also when it comes to hotels, because it feels like a very boutique-y, stylish, quirky hotel, which is really on the rise here in the UAE, which wasn't around 17 years ago. And I love them. I just find them quite individual.
The brand is something that I'm extremely passionate about and exceptionally protective of, as the team will tell you. We are Studio One Hotel, so everything we do is geared towards the movies. You know, everything where you look in the hotel, there's some sort of reference to the movie somewhere. We have large pictures of famous actresses in the lobby. We have Life Before Netflix, which is actually TVs, old TVs collected.
I saw that, and they're wrapped around like a film reel.
Yeah. So all collected from different areas within the UAE.
You have a big picture of Barbara Streisand. I love Barbara.
Oh, yes, can't.
Who loves a bit of Babs?
Can't beat a bit of Barbara,
bit
can
of
we?
So what's it like working in this environment, in this neighborhood as well? What are the people like?
Do you know what? They're absolutely amazing. One of the great things about the hotel is that the first time I walked in, it was like someone was giving you a giant hug. And that's actually mirrored about the whole community. So whenever I go to the gym across the road, everyone's so welcoming. When I go to Circle Cafe, for example, in Tikal,
everybody knows your name.
Everyone's so happy to see you, all so welcoming. And we mirror that exactly the same thing in Studio One Hotel as well. We make sure that we are completely welcoming to everyone that comes in.
Yeah, community feel is a very big thing right now in the UAE, which I love, and I think all of us grew up in it back in our own home, so I think it's something we need to develop here more of. Now, you have an ambassador program. You're really passionate about all of this. You can hear it in your voice, and there's so much that you're involved in with the hotel. So let's start off one by one. What is this pillar, this One World policy that you have?
So in 2021, when I joined the company, we decided to set up a sustainable policy. We'd been through COVID, we were coming out in 2001. We wanted to come out strong, and we wanted to make sure that the community were a really big part of that, developing the sustainability elements, developing the community, and also looking after the team within the building as well to make sure that they were looked after. It was very clear after the pandemic that people were just as susceptible to all these things as our community and as the environment as well. So we came up with the Studio One World policy, which takes care of all these three pillars. So S1 Cares deals with the community, everybody in our community, how we give back to them, how we develop those projects as well. S1 Sustainability is fairly obvious. That's all our sustainability projects that we do at the hotel. And then S1 Wellbeing is actually a look at our stars. We call our staff stars because obviously Studio One Hotel, again,
fully on brand. They don't do that with us at Dubai Eye, do they? Yeah, we need to be called stars. Yeah, superstars. Yes. Okay.
And how we look after the stars and how we give back to them, how we develop them, how we look after their well-being. You know, things like we took them to the desert safari. So four different trips on a desert safari so that all the team could experience those different things. We have a training day going on that'll be taking place in Kite Beach in a few weeks' time after Ramadan. We have volleyball games, we do football games, there's football teams, there's basketball teams, there's cricket teams. So all the ways that we can look at their health, their well-being. Obviously they're away from their families, we are essentially their family, so we want to make sure that we look after them as well.
You have on a Sunday a DJ classes or sessions.
We do,
that
indeed.
Sounds so groovy. Is it going to be really loud though for the hotel guests?
Do you know what, they are amazing because they have the headphones just like you guys.
Okay.
So it's actually very, very quiet. We barely know that they're
so
there
who's
sometimes.
Teaching them the
These are actual industry DJs as well. So original mix DJs set it up after COVID. It was born after entertainment wasn't allowed. So they decided to again give back to the community and teach these kids how to actually be DJs. And I will not lie to you, some of them are incredible. We've actually had some of them play at venues. They are that good. They used to earn live passes so that they could actually play live in our venues as well.
I was going to say, they're probably cheaper to hire than the real ones. Take advantage.
But they are absolutely incredible, and some of the talent that's coming through is unbelievable.
What you talk about how this Studio One is based around the whole film industry. Do you not have like a little film studio there going on or something in the pipes?
It's something that I would definitely love to do. We've talked about all sorts of things in terms of developing podcast studios and things like that, because obviously it's really, really important. But I think our focus at the moment is to stick with the community and allow those projects to develop organically as well.
And what about your collaboration with the Waste Lab? That's quite interesting.
It's fantastic, actually. It's a real interesting project. It's very, very close to our hearts as well. So we actually have all the tenants involved. So all the different venues are involved. And we basically recycle our food waste. It gets taken off by the Waste Lab. It gets turned into compost. And we take that compost back to plants in our sustainable gardens, and obviously to look at plants around Studio One Hotel as well.
So you have sustainable gardens.
So we have a little sustainable garden.
What are you growing that we can steal today?
At the weekend, the children were growing lemon trees, orange. They were planting orange seeds and they were planting tomatoes as well, I believe. So we actually have the children come in and plant at the weekend.
I love that. What about the Ranchers Ladies?
So the Ranchers Ladies have actually been with us since day one. A small group of women come for a coffee on a Tuesday morning, and it started with about 10 or 11 of them, and I think there's around about now 30 or 40 on a Tuesday morning. And they come in, they have their coffee, they meet as part of the community. Obviously a lot of these women are older, they tend to be on their own, so they tend to get together, have a drink, enjoy their Tuesday morning, and then they have circles morning. They have people come in and give them talks about various different things. They had somebody come in and give a mental health talk the other week. So yeah, they're a really, really nice community, beautiful community of ladies, and they just get together, and basically it's women supporting women, which is something that I'm very passionate about as well.
And with all these programs going on that you are so passionate about, when do you rest? I'm just like confused.
That's a very good question. I think when you do something that you absolutely love, you don't work a day in your life.
You'll be tired in 10 years, trust me. That's where I am right now. But I love it. I love your passion. And it sounds like such a fun hotel. And I know it's across the street from where we are. So I think I'll pass by and definitely take a look.
Excellent.
Today.
No, of course.
Thank you, Michelle, so much. If you want to find out about DJ classes and all these ladies' classes, just head to Studio One Hotel at Studio City. Now we're coming live to you from Studio City for House and House. They joined us earlier talking about the neighbourhood. And now I want to ask you, if you're thinking about moving here or have any plans to, what are the nurseries and schools like? Well, we have a young woman, I should say young lady, she's sitting in front of me to talk about it. Samin Khan, you're the nursery manager at Ranches Nursery. How are you today?
I'm absolutely amazing today.
You are amazing. You came very early. I think you were observing us just to see what we were like.
This is the first time I'm on the radio, so I just want to see what's happening over here.
Well, it's nice that you joined us. Is nursery closed? Obviously, it's finished now for the day. The kids have gone home for a nap.
We are closed for the spring, so...
Oh, it's holidays, yeah, of course. Yeah, you see, when you don't have kids, you know, you just don't even know the segments, do you? The times, and they're off, but Helen's off, so she's off with the kids. Mm-hmm. Now, your nursery, the Ranches Nursery, it caters for kids age 18 months to 3 years, right?
Absolutely.
Now, tell me about the nursery itself, because at the end of the day, parents want to choose the best schools, the best nurseries. What is so special about this? What is it that you like that is quite different, the way it teaches children and engages them?
See, Ranches Nursery caters from 18 months to 3 years, as you said. A nursery, a person can go to the nursery from 45 days in Dubai. But we have only 18 months and above because it's a part of the school. So Ranches Primary School is there.
So it's linked to the school, right?
It is linked to the school. It is a school nursery. Now, when we are talking about children from 0 to 5 years old, that's the most important age of the child, where they learn rapidly, their brain is working, their brain is growing. So that's the time when you need to send your child to a nursery where they get the opportunity to learn to
you know, it's funny because I can't remember. Did I go to a nursery at 18 months? I mean, I was too young to remember. I don't know. Is that quite early?
It's not early. It's the right time to develop their social, the emotional development, for the peers, to have a play with all the children along, so that they know how to socialize. That's the most important thing at that age.
Okay, so what kind of things do you actually teach them there? How do they engage?
They engage by learning through play. So if you come to a nursery, it's full of messy plays where the children actually touch things and see things and hear things, and the communication and language is the most important things which we are looking for.
I was going to say, I have two friends back in Australia. They had kids around the same age. Mm. One of them went to preschool and one of them just stayed at home with his mom, and you can tell the difference.
But hang on a minute. Don't you think that depends? So like when I grew up, for example, we had a lot of kids in our area. We had aunties and uncles. The cousins would come around. It would all be the same age. It is really about interaction. If you're not getting at home, if your parents are working and you're just at home with a maid, then it is better for them to go. So does it depend on your circumstances, do you think?
It depends on circumstances, but like, I'm just saying these guys are... The single mum, she had to send her kid to preschool, but this young girl was, I could have conversations with her before she even turned two because she was doing sign languages for more and like please and thank you. And then Hunter, he was just wanted to run. But
see, it always says that it takes a village to bring up a child, but in Dubai there's no village. We have nuclear families, yeah. We have nannies to take care of. Nanny culture is quite a big thing over here, so it's always better to send the child to a nursery where they are interacting with the children of their age. They have teachers, they have a routine to follow, and of course it helps them in the communication language. I mean, for you see a 3-year-old from a nursery, it will be having a nice long conversation with you. They are reading books, they are into to. Every day there are different activities, so they are on it rather than
how many
a person
hours
like,
how many hours are there at nursery
they start at 8 o'clock and we have till 2 o'clock.
Okay, so that's, and they have a nap obviously.
No.
Oh, I used to have a nap when I was at preschool.
I still do.
We do have.
They're hardworking here with these little kids in Dubai.
We do have nap for 18 months old, but that is only for an hour or so.
That's pretty tough. Like, what's that, 8 till 2 p.m. for a 3-year-old?
Oh, they're very busy.
I still want a nap now. They're 25.
They're getting them ready for the real world here.
They are very busy out there. We have lots of things planned for them. We follow a planning. We follow the British curriculum, that is EYFS. And the tracking is done, the development is done, and all the planning and all the activities are done in such a way to enhance their development.
Well, you're definitely building up their stamina, so I'm sure that when they go home, they do want to have a nap.
They do
so that's
have
good,
a nap.
Good for
course,
the parents,
yes.
Of course.
I mean, after 2 years, most of the children do drop the naps. So,
but it's quite intense for you as a nursery manager. Are you with the kids or just oversee the nursery?
So I've been teaching for my whole life. For 16 years, I was a nursery teacher. Mm. And after that, I became a manager, which helped me a lot because then, you know, you've been in their place and you know how the things work. So I know a lot of things at their a teacher's level, a child's level and everything. For me, as a manager, I do get involved in the children's development and everything. And I just love to go whenever I'm in the office and like stuck up with 100 emails to answer. I just run to a classroom and spend some time with the children. That's my therapy. That's how I do.
That is therapy for about an hour or two, and then you need a break. But,
yes.
but it's at ranches too. So let me talk about, we're in Studio City right now in this area before House and House, and we've been chatting about the neighborhood. Where are the kids located that come to the nursery?
They're usually, it's a community nursery, so usually they are coming from Arabian Ranches 1, 2, Miras. Of course, I haven't seen anyone coming from Studio City, but of course that is how to increase your community, and people are invited from Studio City. It's only 3 kilometers from there. So, of course, what we provide is more hands-on activities, we have lots and lots of lovely open areas, which I think people who are staying in apartments, they don't get it. Mm. So we've got lots of gardens, and we use it a lot. In winters, we are mostly outside picnics. They are have water plays, all the messy plays. I mean, when you are going back, they are going back in the house, you will have a lot of laundries to do because they are very messy. I always tell them to bring them in rags. So that's how the children learn. If you don't give them the opportunity of touching, smelling, seeing, they will never get it.
Tell us about your sustainability and recycling little programs for the kids between 18 months and 3 years. What are they learning?
They're learning. I think we are past age of recycling. It is reuse or reduce. So we had a little patch of land next to our classroom and it was vacant. We didn't know what to do. The only opportunity we have is to put a big plastic play equipment and let the children enjoy. So we started an initiative for building a junkyard playground, which is one of a kind in Dubai. I don't think so any of the school or the nurseries has it. And it was a community effort where we asked the parents as well as the staff to bring things, and we got some pallets, broken sinks, broken tables, and we came together to build actually a playground for the children, which they love it.
Out
of the junk. And it's an ongoing process, project where we keep on coming back like small mini workshops and keep on adding things to it. So we made from a broken sink, we made a mud kitchen from the broken tables, all the things, pallets, furnitures, everything from out of junk.
That's amazing.
So that's a little sustainable approach. I think we need to get and there's a lot of gardening happening in that patch of area.
Yeah,
so,
that's amazing. I wish I'd learned gardening.
Love
when I was
it. Yeah, and a lot of loose parts. So if you ever change your tires, give it to us.
Is there anything we can donate to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Anything which you are throwing is wooden and the tires. Yeah. Anything, you just give it to us. Pots and pans.
We might
anything.
Give you our little engineer guy here, Rick. He's not doing much. He's a bit of junk on the side. Nah, we need him. That's good to know, though. So any, like, tires and boxes and everything, we can
exactly.
drop off.
Exactly, anything.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Samin. Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, Hope you're having a good Monday. Now, our lawyer today is Andrew Lyons. He's back again from Davidson & Co. Rushed here. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. And yourself?
Amazing. Very, very good. We're glad you made it on time. Was there a lot of traffic on the way here?
It was actually okay. I was worried when I saw Hesse Street named on the Google Maps, but it was fine.
Oh, good. Well, Chloe will keep you up to date with the traffic when you head home. Now, for the next hour, you're going to give us all free legal advice when it comes to anything property related. But also, you wanted to touch on general dispute resolutions today, right? Because that's something that you're seeing coming up.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people out there that contact me generally, not really understanding what the dispute resolution process in the UAE consists of, or specifically in Dubai.
Yeah.
There are different courts, different methods of, or alternative methods of dispute resolution, which are available subject to the terms of a contract. And a lot of people think, oh, if I have to go to court, that's a really, really bad and inaccessible and expensive process. And so they just basically avoid it entirely. Whereas just educating people a little bit about what the options are that are available either at the outset when you're before you sign the contract so that you can put something which suits your needs best.
Okay.
Or after
the fact. So try and avoid this in advance.
Choose what's best for you in the context of whatever the contract is commercial terms it's underpinning.
Mm.
And secondly, just let everyone know a little bit about how accessible Dubai courts, DIFC courts, or alternative methods of dispute resolution like arbitration might actually be.
So I did some research too, because I'm not a lawyer. We talked about different, you're saying, processes such as arbitration. Explain what that is for the people like us that don't know.
So arbitration is referred to as an alternative method of dispute resolution. Mm. The parties to the agreement who have a dispute have to either opt into that as the format for resolving a dispute at the outset of the contract. So you would normally see a clause in the contract which refers a dispute to arbitration, or they can agree to it after. And there are different pros and cons for arbitration versus, for example, litigation through either the DIFC courts or the Dubai courts. For example, if you're having a shareholders agreement and you are having a dispute, you don't want that dispute, your dirty laundry, to be aired in public. You don't want the public to be privy to internal disputes. And so arbitration might be a better suited way to resolve your dispute, because you can do it behind closed doors and it all stays confidential. Similarly, there is this New York Convention where a number of different countries around the world have signed this treaty, this convention, which means that where you have an award from an arbitral center, that you can enforce that in multiple different jurisdictions, whichever jurisdiction is a signatory to that New York Convention. Which means if you're trading on an international level, let's say you're buying goods from a foreign country and they're coming here, you might not want to get a judgment from a Dubai court or even a DIFC court, because when you eventually win the award or the judgment, you have to then think, how do I enforce it? And enforcing a judgment of a court can be a little bit more difficult than enforcing an arbitral award, particularly where you're doing business with a country that is a signatory to the New York Convention.
Is a nicer way to resolve this known as negotiation and mediation?
Well, that again, I would say, is the first step that you would take before you physically file either with arbitration or with litigation.
So if you can resolve it there, that would help. But if not, then you're going to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, I think all parties will naturally try to negotiate and resolve a dispute between themselves before they take that kind of nuclear step to actually filing formally with the authorities.
But how easy, you're talking about, you know, resolving this in courts, how easy is it when it goes to coming to court? Because like you said, a lot of people are avoiding it, because the first thing I think of is like, how long is this going to take? How many weeks? How much money is it going to cost?
Yeah, I think those are the traditional kind of thought processes that go through anyone's head at this kind of stage. I think that for those who don't speak Arabic, going to the local onshore Dubai courts is a kind of daunting concept, because those are civil law and Arabic language proceedings.
Yeah.
They obviously have the option, if they opt in at the right time, to go to the DIFC courts.
Mm.
Subject to getting the terms of the contract in place at the outset, that can be a better fit, particularly if both parties to the contract are native English speakers, are familiar with common law jurisdictions, then the common law jurisdiction and the English language of the DIFC courts might be better suited. Some obviously might prefer the onshore Dubai courts, and there are benefits to both.
Yeah. What are, let's put that to one side. What are some of the most common issues that you're seeing right now, just generally coming to the office?
In terms of disputes?
Disputes, real estate, just laws going on right now.
I think there's a huge volume of inquiries that generally come in the context of real estate disputes, whether it be buyer-seller disputes or landlord-tenant disputes. And I think that's why when you're doing these segments, the conversation can often go towards landlord-tenant or buyer-seller disputes.
Well, it's funny you said that, because a friend of mine said yesterday he's in a dispute with his landlord who's trying to increase his rent or chuck him out. And I'm like, well, that's been going on for the past year or two now, hasn't it?
It's been quite topical for quite some time. And that's not unusual when you look back and you see the performance of the real estate sector in Dubai in the last 2 years, really, since the onset of COVID, since Dubai was so quick to get back on the ground.
But here's the thing. Is there a, obviously you have to regulate a lot, but are landlords taking a full advantage of this, and are some people out of the law right now?
I think what you have to remember is there's always two sides to a coin.
Tell me the two sides.
Well, you've got a landlord, for example, a property owner. He's renting the property out, and we've seen mortgage rates have gone up quite dramatically in the last 6 to 12 months. Now, that landlord has obviously purchased that property as an investment, and he's interested in what return on that investment he can get. Now, if he is losing that return when mortgage rates increase, it's squeezing his return. And so if he is entitled to charge a higher rate of rent because that is what the market dictates, then naturally he's going to try to do that. It's okay for him to want to do that, provided he follows the rules and regulations that that underpin an increase in rent. Similarly, from a tenant's perspective, you don't want to be bearing the cost independently. So you understandably would be a bit upset if a landlord is trying to increase your rent either beyond the maximum that he is legally entitled to or without having given you sufficient notice. So I can understand both sides of the coin. I think most tenants accept that it's fair for a landlord to want to increase. It would be unfair for a landlord to be stuck with a rent, which was maybe what we refer to as a COVID rent, a particularly low rent at the peak of COVID when rents dropped quite significantly. And it would be unfair to pin them to that, because when those rates were starting to drop and when individuals were maybe getting, if you think back to when the labor laws changed and authorized employers to give maybe a 25, 30% or 40% reduction in salaries as a urgent measure. Those tenants were quite happy to get the benefit of that when it came to then the reduced rents. So they have to, you know, you have to ride the wave up and down.
I know you're trying to make me feel sorry for my landlord, but it's not going to happen. But good job there. Okay, we'll be back with Andrew Lyons from Davidson Co. answering all your questions when it comes to real estate.
Dubai Eye 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances.
Now, you're very brave to come and answer these live, I have to say. So we have a text, no name on this one. That's fine. You can send your text, be anonymous. It's absolutely fine. So the message is, I currently have a company in the UAE with my partner. My partner hasn't been working or contributing to the company for the past year and is very difficult to deal with. Now, I'm no longer able to work with him. My option is to start another similar company on the side, as dissolving the existing company or selling or buying each other's shares doesn't seem viable. So the question is, am I able to start another company in the same line of business on the side without any risk of a civil case? And please note, we do not have an NDA or NOC agreement signed between us, and the MOU has no clause about non-competition.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think that I would always recommend that one exercises caution when considering to make that kind of move, and to undertake the right due diligence. So this question is a start to that due diligence, but it merely allows me to scratch the surface for the purposes of this conversation, because what I would want to look at is, I gather there is an MOU, albeit it doesn't specify that there is a restrictive covenant, i.e. a non-compete or equivalent in there. But what you have to realize is that there are company rules and regulations which underpin how shareholders and directors operate and manage a company. And if you are both registered shareholders and you need to take into consideration who is the general manager, whether there are directorships shared between both of you, you have to be mindful of the terms of the memorandum and articles of association, which will generally be standard templated terms provided by whichever free zone or authority you have your license from. Mm. But those are capable of being tweaked, customized to some degree. So take a look at that, because it will usually dictate additional terms that you maybe haven't considered. It won't just be exclusively what's contained within the MOU. There are inherent responsibilities on a shareholder, for example, to do what is in the best interest of the company. And to go and set up a competing company is not necessarily going to be compliant with the fiduciary duties that you have to the company itself.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Okay, Rick has said, my eviction notice and tenancy contract will come to an end on the 5th of May 2024, and the reason for eviction is renovation. The landlord has not submitted any supporting documents to show that the property will be unlivable during the renovation or any approval from Dubai Municipality. Now, I went to the trustee centre in Almanara and they said that I can't open a case against the eviction until after the expiry. However, that does not seem right. I need some advice, please. What would you say?
Yeah, that's a good question as well. I think that the responsibility ultimately would be on a landlord to physically evict a tenant. Now, if you don't believe that the eviction notice is kosher, is genuine, then what I would say is tell the landlord that you don't accept the validity of the eviction notice on the basis that it is incomplete, and tell them that you're prepared and want to renew the lease. Now, in order for you to ensure that you don't become in breach of your payment obligations at the renewal, you should file what's called an offer and deposit case with RERA, which means you're basically lodging your checks for the undisputed portion of your rent, and you're asking RERA to require the landlord to give you a renewed lease on the same terms and conditions. Now, the landlord will inevitably come back and say, well, actually, I'm evicting you on the grounds that I'm going to be renovating the property. But the law requires that in those circumstances, they need to have a document from Dubai Municipality which confirms, having looked at the plans, the renovation plans, that those renovations are so significant that they cannot be done while a tenant is in situ. If they don't have that, then they haven't complied with their obligation.
Okay, Rick, I hope that's helped you a little bit. Now, Zaida sent a message saying, we were talking about this earlier with House and House about off-plan properties. Now, I bought a property in Dubai off-plan. The villa was completed at the end of January, but I haven't had the funds to register the property with the Dubai Land Department until now. Now, I've paid the 20% deposit to the builder and taken 80% for the mortgage. The mortgage with the bank is now ready with the manager's check, and I sent it to the DLD office ready for registration. As it's taken a bit of time for me to arrange this, the builder is now telling me he's going to cancel the contract or he's going to charge me an additional amount as the market price has gone up. Is this possible, and what rights does the builder have?
I'd like to see that question written down. It's a chunky enough one, but I would say that there will be a contract that you'll have which will specify payment timelines and then what the obligations are in relation to payment dates and transfer of title thereafter. So you cannot renegotiate the purchase and sale price unless, for example, and there is a standard provision in the law and in the contracts usually, which say that in the event that the development of the unit is actually plus or minus 5%, they can reserve the right to increase prorated up to a certain level. But not just because there's been a fluctuation in market price at that point. If you've committed to a purchase price, that should be legally binding. Unless you're in breach of your payment obligations,
yeah,
and the seller is now saying, I'm going to invoke my right to terminate you unless you come to the table to renegotiate. That's maybe a slightly different scenario, which I don't think is what we see in this one.
There's just so much small print when you get any contracts. This is the problem, and this is where the loopholes are. People are like, oh, you didn't read that, did you? Didn't understand that. I think legal documents should be broken down for the average 13-year-old to understand.
I think that they are quite daunting when you see them because they can be quite voluminous, quite big, chunky documents. Mm-hmm. But you can quickly cut through it. If you look at the index, there are useful headings at each section. Now I've looked at so many of these that I know how to jump around to see it. A lot of the provisions are standard templated provisions that you see across multiple master developers in different projects.
Yeah.
So there are key things to look out for, which is dispute resolution clause, payment timelines, and usually you can expect that they'll have an extra 12 months to extend their delivery timeline.
Okay. So Ryan has texted in saying, I want to know if I can add people to a property title deed after signing it, or even include them on the day we sign the title deed.
That would probably be dependent on whether you are buying in the secondary market or whether you are buying direct for the first time from a developer, from a seller. The answer to the question usually is yes, but you would have to go and discuss that with the seller. But it would also depend on the mortgage that you're taking out on the property, because the banks might have a different view as to whether they are prepared to have multiple registered owners on a title deed where they only have a mortgage arrangement with one of those parties. Usually they don't allow that.
Okay. So Samina sent a bit of a long message. So I think I'm going to come back to that after the break. But there's no name on this one. So I have a tenant who is always late with their payment. Currently, they have not signed any new contract, provided any new checks, and have stayed for 3 months from December until now without paying any rent. Mm. Now, additionally, I just discovered that they have sublet the apartment with partitions, which is clearly stated as not allowed in the old contract. Please let me know what I should do legally. Very patient landlord here, 3 months.
Very patient. Allowing it to go 3 months is about as patient as you could ever expect to be. But you have two grounds for termination and eviction. First ground is non-payment. And in order to crystallize that, you would have to file. But before you file, you have to send a 30-day payment notice through the formal channels. So once you've sent a 30-day payment notice through RERA, then, or Notary Public, then if they still don't pay by the expiry of that 30-day period, then you can move straight for eviction. And that should be a pretty swift process. The second ground of eviction that you have is for unlawful subleasing.
I know. Do you hear a lot of this?
I've seen a little bit about it in the past. For them to sublet, they would have to have an NOC. It's not done as often these days as it used to be. But you can apply through RERA. If you go online to the RERA website, there is a service option there where you can ask them to send basically an expert to go and visit the premises to then inquire with the occupants the basis upon which they are residing.
Okay.
And that will enable you to then demonstrate an evidence that you have unlawful subtenants in situ, both of which give you grounds. I'd say the path of least resistance might be the non-payment, but once you give 30 days notice, that obviously gives them 30 days to pay. If they do pay within that 30 days and you therefore lose that ground of eviction, then I would probably switch over to the subleasing.
Now, Samina says, this is a long one. Sit back, Andrew. My landlord recently gave me a mandatory legal notice for eviction with the intention to sell. Now, ideally, I have to move out in a few months, but then one of the secretaries of my landlord mentioned that they want to talk to me in person, and they mentioned that if I'm interested, I can stay with a new contract with the new price. Now, basically what they're saying is since they've given me notice, they want to treat me as a new tenant with the new price instead of sticking to the maximum 20% limit enforced by RERA for renewals. And he also mentioned that even after this, they would give me a court notice again and a new price. Now, this all sounds a bit crazy to me. It feels like a loophole to get rid of this RERA renewal restriction, and they plan to kick anyone out after a year. So I'm planning to find a new place anyway, because I need to secure a house for my family. But what would be my chances here? Is this actually normal? Is it wrongful eviction?
It sounds to me like they're reserving the right to evict you, making you feel like you are destined for eviction in the hope that you will come back to the negotiation table and agree to an increased rent. The reality is the RERA regulations restrict the extent to which they can increase your rent at any given renewal date. So what I would say is call their bluff, because it's clear that they don't actually intend to sell.
Ah.
So if you say, no, I'll pay an increase subject to what you're legally restricted to increase me to, and that requires them to give 90 days written notice, so they may have already missed the boat on that, then if they ultimately do continue to evict you and they don't sell the property, you can file a claim for damages. against them, which is a relatively straightforward process. Mm. And you can expect to get at least an annual rent and damages.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
So I would probably opt for that. It may be that if they can't, going back to what we discussed at the outset of this segment, looking at it from the two sides of the coin and looking at it from the landlord's point of view, it may be that the landlord will sell it if he can't get a fair market rate for it, in which case he's looking to have a discussion with you. So have the conversation. They don't want to put anything in writing, so they'll do that verbally so that you can't disclose it to the authorities. But you can always file a claim for damages if they do evict you and they don't sell.
Okay. Thank you, Andrew, so much for joining us. And I hope you happily skip down the stairs when you leave, okay?
Dubai Eye 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances.
Make sure you tune into Afternoons with Helen Farmer every weekday at 2 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.